Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This is my opinion, and I'm going to seek my approval. Do I approve of me?
Love doesn't have any expectations. It doesn't seek something in return. It gives because it wants to.
At our core, all of us have these feelings of being unlovable and inadequate. And until we start to care for those parts of ourselves, we can't really have the outer successes that we long for.
Does money buy you intuition, insight, creativity, higher vision, transcendence? No. Money does buy you pleasure, and pleasure is good, but it's not enough. We need fulfillment.
Welcome to the Unwind Podcast, a show to help you pause, relax, reflect, and be curious. I'm your host, Poppy Jamie, a best-selling author and entrepreneur exploring the human experience. I interview world-leading thinkers, shaping ideas around the mind, health, spirituality, philosophy, and culture. I'm often reminded that thoughts become things, so we need to choose the good ones. I hope this show helps you to do that too. This is a very special episode for me as I'm interviewing a woman who has impacted my life enormously. I first met her about 4 to 5 years ago, and since then, no matter what life has thrown at me, she's helped me process it with a wisdom like no other. I'm interviewing Dyka Begg, who has been a professional astrologer and psychotherapist for over 30 years. She's an expert on astrology, psychosynthesis, synchronicity, and mythology. She's a Jung psychologist. She's also one of the world's leading rebirthers and a published author of many books, one in which it's my absolute favorite. Her books are Rebirthing, Freedom from Your Past, Synchronicity, The Promise of Coincidence, On the Trail of Merlin by Dyka and Ian Begg, In Search of the Holy Grail and the Precious Blood by Dyka and Ian Begg. Her book, Synchronicity, as I said, is my favorite beyond favorite. I read it whenever I'm feeling confused about life because it's like a warm hug and a reminder that life is unfolding just as it should. Sometimes all we need is a little bit of patience. And for people like me, patience can be a very difficult thing to cultivate. Dyka has just turned 80, and I was desperate to make sure more people were able to receive this incredible woman's wisdom. Every time I have the privilege of seeing her, I arrive 10 minutes early to ensure I don't miss a minute of her time. I will include a link to her book, Synchronicity, in the show notes, as I can't wait for you to read this too. And I hope you enjoy this very heartwarming interview full of wonderful, wise nuggets. What's a favorite quote you return to often and why?
Well, a family quote. We were always told, you know, you never know what this is good for, instead of, you know, it'll be bad. And also, you never know what's around the corner. Then you don't know what's around the corner for me is always a hopeful thing. And I'm always sort of waiting for the next good thing to come up. It's just in my DNA, you know, being her. And I think that is probably the problem with a lot of people. You know, they're expecting bad things to happen and the walls to come down and the sky to fall in. And they walk around with all these anxieties. But I think that's a very good mantra. You know, you don't know what's around the corner. And then imagine it can only be good.
I love that. And it reminds me of the fact that we have such a negative bias. Most people do. And so when someone uses that phrase often to kind of invoke fear, ooh, you don't know what's around the corner. And you're right.
It's your tone. Yes.
I love the fact that you've just flipped that round.
Do you feel you've always had that optimism of, well, yeah, I don't know what's around the corner?
Yes, yes. As a child, obviously, like all children, you know, I have four sisters and they're always traumas one way or another. And if I was born, you know, the war was still on, the country was poor and recovered very quickly. Of course, they're traumas, but I always felt my life would be good. And when I was about 22 or so, after my first daughter was born, I had a sort of postnatal breakdown. I thought, I don't believe this. This is not my life. I refused to accept that. I didn't take any medication. And it took about a year. And then that, it was an existential crisis, really. But I just didn't believe that this would be my life.
I actually remember reading about that experience. And as you describe, you were going through turmoil because you were doing the wrong thing with the wrong people. And actually, it was the greatest blessing you went through this depressive episode in some ways.
Well, a lot of people should actually have a breakdown in order to break through. You know, they're holding on to all the old defenses. But in any case, I refused to be beaten by whatever the thing was. And you never quite know why that is so, but usually triggered by something, you know, early on. So always had a belief that life will be better, even when it wasn't good, that it's going to be better. And sometimes I just moved heaven and earth to change it as well. You know, you can't always just sit back and hope that something will happen. I mean, you need to do something about it as well. You know, you can see a therapist or you can join a gym or, you know, whatever it takes to move things forward.
What's a life lesson do you find most people struggle with? Especially, you know, you see and you have seen thousands of people over the years. Do you feel that you constantly are finding people with the same sort of struggles, which feel very universal, or they're all quite different?
Well, on the psychological level, it's people have problems with patience. They want it now. And they don't believe if it's not happening tomorrow, it's not never going to happen. And it's this patience, which is a virtue, but by knowing it's going to come, this is that faith of the things not yet seen. And most people, because I have ongoing clients in therapy as well, and try as I might, they don't believe and they have a setback that it's going to be still okay, because I used the chart as well. I said, look, I can see it here. And even when the good things then happen, they look for the next problem. So, you know, that's patience. Is Rainer Maria Rilke, the German poet, who said the problem with mankind is, he said, we're all too impatient. And I think really, you know, that sums it up. Otherwise, we would be in the flow of things, wouldn't we? And just see what's around the corner when we get there.
It's interesting. When I was reading your book, I posted two pages from the book on social media. And one of them was that exact point you make in the book from that German poet, I think, around, you know, human beings being so deeply impatient.
Yeah.
And if only we could be patient enough for things to unfold.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fear that drives people to want evidence now that it's going to be okay. And it's sometimes really hard to turn somebody's assumption, right? But assumption is everything. If you assume that things are going to turn bad or that you'll never get another job, you see, I think when you get let go of your job, let's say, person, that the work gives you up because it's about time. That's the way I look at it. And I see that a lot, because a lot of people over the years, I've been a therapist for over 40 years, and I see it again and again. The job gives them up because the time is right, rather than them standing in their notice. It really has to do with patience. So it's given me up, so what now? You know, my mother was very philosophical, and so was my grandfather. And it was always, you will know one day what this is good for. Mm. That was always the philosophy. So, I mean, maybe I was very lucky. We didn't have anybody going around, oh, we all go to hell in a handcart. You know, that didn't exist in our family.
You may have answered the question I was about to ask, but what would you say is the wisest advice you've ever been given, and by whom?
Probably because it was the earliest, and I often thought about it, I could visualize it. My maternal grandfather used to say, and I'm just translating it loosely, he said, when you think you can't go any further, from somewhere appears a little light. I mean, that's still with me, and in German it rhymes, actually. And I mentioned that to somebody the other day, and she said, oh, that's so beautiful. That's the way I think as well. So I'm not the only one. There are optimists in the world, and I'm an optimist, you know. There are optimists in the world. I think if you're a pessimist, you grew up a pessimist. Your conditioning was pessimistic. You had, I mean, a lot of people I see are brought up with a poverty mentality. They always fear that they're going to lose their job, or they never have enough, and they don't give because they're always afraid of not having enough and so on. And that's a collective malaise on planet Earth, I think. You know, and as a result of that, people shut their hearts, they don't give because they think they end up poor.
Do you think the poverty mentality has got worse over the last few decades, or do you feel that there's always been the same amount of people on this earth with that mentality?
I think it probably hasn't got worse because people have a bit more money. You know, I mean, when I think of when I grew up, there was no money around. We had no pocket money, or people spent more money, but they also spent more on themselves. It's all this self-grooming, you know, the gym membership, the hair and all of that. I mean, I know people who spend a fortune on themselves, but they then hunt around for the cheapest pair of socks or a very cheap present for someone's birthday, or, you know, like petrol station flowers and so on. I think we've become more selfish because there's more to be selfish about, and this fear of, you know, not having enough. I mean, I don't know how people can buy a bottle of perfume at Lidl for £1 and give it to someone as a birthday present. I just, you know, but there are lots of people like that, no matter how much money they have. Money itself doesn't make you generous. Not money itself, you know, but it starts very early on in life.
Do you think that you can change, especially if you, for whatever reason, your soul chose your parents and your parents did have a poverty mindset, and so you've been conditioned in this way? Is it possible to change?
Of course. Yes, I mean, one of my daughters, whenever she is a Capricorn, and Capricorns are a bit anxious about finances and the future and so on. And she said, every time I worry about it, she said, I write out a big check to my favorite charity. So she counteracts it. She doesn't have to worry about it, but she does, because it's part of the Capricorn character on the whole. Think of Howard Hughes, you know, people like that. I mean, who was very stingy.
That's such a good piece of advice of, you know, putting action where our worry is.
Give,
you know, because
yeah.
We want to do something. So is it giving? Is it, you know, going to do something?
Give it and command it to come back a thousandfold. You know, whatever we give, Goethe says that as well. You know, what we give to others, the joy and the generosity we give to others returns into our own hearts. So we don't need to worry about giving at all.
Now, I'm so excited to start asking you questions on your book, Synchronicity. This book is, and I'm not just saying this, it's my favorite book I've ever read. I've now read it, I would say, at least 3 to 4 times.
Oh, thank you.
I read it again on Sunday. And I was, as I was sitting there with a cup of tea, I generally thought, I don't know what would be happier right now. I had a fire on reading Synchronicity. There's so many reasons I love it, but it just has the great ability to remind you that life is in divine flow, and
yes,
we aren't in total control of our lives, which actually is a nice feeling anyway. For me, it is. But just to start very simply, what do you mean by the term synchronicity? What does this describe?
Yes, well, it was Jung who found or coined the word in 1929. And it's a meaningful coincidence. Coincidences happen all the time, you know, you find a parking place and so on. It's only when it's meaningful. Like I give one example in the book where the town was chock-a-block with cars. And we were staying in a hotel and we had a lovely space outside, and then we went off for the day. And we came back and it was a two-tier town in Italy, Bino town, Mino. And there were two main roads. We'd already been round about 3 times together with hundreds of other cars. The Italians, on bank holidays, they are out there. And so we would have had to go out of town and park in some village or something. And I said, let's go once more. And there, right in front of our hotel, we'd gone onto the other tier, was our space from the morning. Now, that's a meaningful coincidence. We were working on Holy Grail sites or something like that. And it has meaning. The book wants to be written. We have angels looking after us. They find parking places for us. They found the right key to the church we had to go into and things like that. So there is a meaning to that. Now, synchronicity, there have to be two things. One is your inner thing, right? I need to find whatever it is. You know, I want to find a shop, or I want to find a church, or I want to find a cure. And the outer event. And when those two come together, you say, aha, that's it. That's a synchronicity. It's a meaningful coincidence without a cause. It's not just one thing causes that. It happens without a cause. And we all have these things in our life, you know, and say, oh my God, don't believe it. You know, where did that come from? So that's basically what synchronicity is. They happen all the time, but most people pay no attention to it.
And why did Carl Jung start noticing synchronicity in the beginning?
He was having conversation with Niels Bohr, the physicist, and they were talking about it as well. But I think he already observed the phenomenon of synchronicity in his life. And he did some research into astrology, and he charged somebody else with the research, a couple of his colleagues, and they took charts of couples and had a look at that, and they were amazed at the synchronicity between this chart and that chart. The sun of one, which is masculine, the moon of the others with the feminine, or the two moons. And there was such beyond chance that, you know, if you compared your chart with your parents' chart, you see a lot of synchronicities there because you're connected somehow. So then he wrote a book about it, and the book is a lot about this research, but there wasn't all that much written about it at the time. So when I wrote that book, there was hardly anything there, but there wasn't. That's the first popular book on it. That was a psychological book, but I don't think there was actually much at all. And since then, as you see, it came out in 2001, science has moved a lot more into that direction. We call it the new thought, or new thoughters are the people who think along this line. And that is about that thoughts are real and can manifest physically. So science, and we know that from subatomic particles and the whole quantum field, and it's up. Dr. Joe Dispenza writes very clearly about that in detail and how this happens. So science has caught up with what a lot of people, you know, before me had already found. It's in the Bible. You know, these things unseen, they're already there, but they're not yet visible.
It is interesting because you write that we have been conditioned to actually not observe synchronicity.
Yeah.
As you write, as soon as you train the eye to synchronicity, you often see more of them. And yet 99.9% of us who've read this book probably haven't even trained ourselves to look for synchronicity. And why do you think that is?
They don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, if somebody says, oh, I never see a pink beetle car, and you say, well, go out for 24 hours and have a look, and suddenly you see them. Or you want to see a man with a pink tie, and suddenly you see them. You know, we don't look. We don't observe. I would imagine the majority of people are pretty negative about things. Mm. They say, oh, I'm not superstitious. Or, you know, yeah, a bit of like, it's a sort of person, you know, they win 100 pounds, they say, oh, it's not a million, is it? So there's always the negative side to it, which is probably majority of mankind, you know, expecting the worst or protecting their little bit in case it's taken away or in case it all gets pear-shaped. So this is human nature. And lucky are the ones that can turn that around and wake up in the morning with a song in their heart and say, today's going to be a good day and I'm going to make sure it's a good day. Okay. Have you heard of Anthony de Mello? Well, he's one of my favorites. He was a Franciscan, and he's dead now. But he wrote a book called Awareness, and he talks about how this pupil goes to the master and said, Master, what's the secret of enlightenment? He said, awareness. And what else? Awareness, awareness. And anything else? Awareness, awareness, awareness. Now get out of here. And he said, awareness is everything. Or Neville Goddard is another one of my favorites. He's my real inner teacher at the moment. He talks about assumption. Our life goes according to our assumptions of it. If you think it's going to be a good life, that everything will come about in the right way, or it's on your path and suffering is part of that, you know, makes you stronger, then I think you're very lucky that you have that. But if you come from everything is horrible because of very bad childhood backgrounds, you've got quite a job to turn that around because your evidence is that it's not good. Mm. So it takes a lot of time in healing, but yet we can jump that bridge. Mm. You know, we could put the past behind. Some people have done it. They have some kind of transpersonal experience. Occasionally they're hit by lightning, literally, or they have an electric shock and it changes everything. And so they say, I shall never doubt the good future again. You know, I mean, how many people look at the sun, that great big love ball in the sky that makes everything on this planet? Everything comes from the sun, you know. So how many people are aware of that, you know, and it keeps shining no matter who you are, what you are. So I'm very much into that widening of that consciousness. And this is what happens in a rebirth. And I hope I pass this on to people, to my clients. Usually it's quite good. A lot of the work I do is simply a recording. And sometimes I've met them, if they're European or they've been here or I've been in America, but a lot of them I've never met before. They give me a little bit about themselves and, you know, it's like a book opening up. I do the chart and that often changes things. And then they, you know, might have a few more sessions afterwards. So it is, I know it's possible because I've been in the business for long enough and I've gone through it too.
To talk about Rupert Sheldrake's work, because that really relates to synchronicity. And he was obviously very early in seeing animals as examples for the unseen. Can you tell us a bit more about the inspiration from that?
I don't know whether I came across the book by chance when I was writing Synchronicity or whether I looked him up. I can't remember, but he talks about the morphic resonance, right? That there is this energy field. Everything we put out, every thought has a frequency. Everything we put out goes out there. And I just love dogs, and I like the title. And it's just extraordinary. His experiments show if somebody's been away or somebody goes out every day and they come, you know, it doesn't matter what time they come home or which route they take, the dog knows the time they actually will be back home. And that's when they go to the front door. And they've changed the experiment no matter what. And my husband's brother had a cat like that. And he was a naval commander. And they never knew really when they came home, but they knew the cat. The cat would go and sleep on his bed within 24 hours of him coming home. There is this, you know, I mean, I think Sheldrake believes that we've all had it once upon a time in our sort of animal nature and that we've lost it. You know, you get shaman in the Australian outback, let's say, and they know exactly what lies ahead. And, you know, they just still have that sense.
Yes, you talk about that in the book, this idea that we've been kind of trained to be boxed in by these five senses. And yet actually this practice of noticing synchronicity is opening up our senses in some ways.
Yeah, it's like sort of noticing things with the other mind. I'm sure we've all had experiences like that. Maybe just say, just wait another minute and then something happens. You know, you just know not to give up on something. Say, no, just another minute, just another day or just another hour. And then see, it's almost like something is saying, not yet, you know, just wait. I think the waiting is the important thing. To give the angels, if you like, or your inner guides or your intuition a chance to put the pattern together.
I think one of the reasons I find it so reassuring, which I'm sure many people do, is this idea that, and you have a chapter called The Universe is Flirting with You.
Yes, I like that.
Yeah, and I want to ask you about that. But it's, you know, this idea that we aren't alone in this universe. You know, synchronicity is this idea of, you know, having communication with something that is not yet known, I find deeply reassuring.
Yes.
Principle.
Well, there are, you know, there are people in the media like Gemma Arterton, who when she was five, she said, I want to be an actress when I grow up. So her mother said, well, you better get yourself into drama school. And so she did, you know. I mean, that kind of thing, or the little ballet dancer, it's already there. With many children, their path is already there, visible in the way they behave. But if something goes wrong, the child gets betrayed, abusive parents, somebody dies, or, you know, some horrible event, that gets cut short. But if the environment is supportive and they take their cues from the child. Not my son's going to be a doctor, but my son enjoys playing with mud, you know, and he might become a painter or something, you know. It's there. Everybody has that. And everybody has that path, but it can be interrupted through the environment when you grow up. Abuse, lack of anything, and only the fashionable thing is lack of, they say lack of money, but it's not really. You know, it's lack of love, lack of attention. Parents should really see where the child needs to be pushed a little, or, you know, where their talents lie. And not saying, you know, stop painting, you know, you've got to earn a living when you grow up. So, you know, do something useful, which is, of course, often what happens. And but the big movement going on, as you know, Pluto has just gone, the planet Pluto of fate and so on, has just moved into Aquarius, and we are really now in the Aquarian age. But I think the big thing that is going to happen in the new age, that we become more and more aware of that other side, that we become less and less guided by the material world, what we see in material things, rather, you know, the inner world. For people who are in touch with that, they say it's much bigger and real than the outer world. So people might start to buy less, you know, they eat good food, they want good clean water, and all these things. I think that's what will happen in the Aquarian age. It is the water bearer, after all, you know, bringing down fresh water from above, which is also knowledge. So it won't happen in my lifetime, but I think collective consciousness is underway. When I first heard about the World Wide Web, I said, my God, that's the beginning of collective consciousness. You know, and look at AI. I mean, some of it is really bad, but it's there again. You know, you put in, give me a story about William, and you'd suddenly get this wonderful story coming out. How is that suddenly happening? And also in the art world, using AI, it's absolutely fantastic what's going on. So you won't see much of it either. But I think 200, 300 years down the line, an age lasts over 2,000 years. And so the Aquarian age is all about energies, frequencies, space travel, you know, and nuclear fusion. That I might just see that, you know, because they say they have the first prototype ready by 2030. So then, you know, that's the beginning of you and your children and so on, nuclear fusion, the clean energy.
I did read ages ago that, I'm not sure what your thoughts are around the world of Atlantis, but supposedly the world, maybe even pre-Ice Age, there are kind of ancient artworks that suggest that something like fusion was already existing in this world.
I've not heard that, but it was, of course, quite an advanced society.
Yeah.
And that happened. But obviously, for some reason, had to be destroyed, you know, for whatever. They say they were too greedy, too materialistic in the end, and didn't work, you know, but who knows. It's a nice idea, isn't it? Plato talked about it and these strange animals that lived around that time. I mean, there is so much mystery out there. One day we will probably know, not you know, several generations down the line, I think. I mean, the world is so mysterious.
I think that's why, another reason I love your book so much, because you give light to actually celebrating this mysterious nature of life. It actually turns life into being so much more interesting and exciting again when you're looking out for synchronicity.
You'll be surprised how many people are afraid of the fact that your thoughts can materialize because they have negative thoughts and they don't know how not to have them. So they think, if I think, you know, I'm sick, I might get sick because I'm thinking it. It's not quite as simplistic as that. You know, it's much more, in order for our thoughts to materialize, we have to bring in our emotions as well. We've got to really be there. Imagine ourselves in that, our own inner movie. It doesn't happen just because we wish for it. It's not wishful thinking. If you say, look, I want a red Cadillac car, you've got to do something about getting that car and that seeing yourself driving it and being in it and every day. And then you might get a role in a movie where you drive a red Cadillac car. These things have happened, of course.
What are your thoughts on manifesting from ego? Because, you know, there's a lot of people might say, right, I want this car. And as you said, then may turn up, in the fact that you then are given a painting of the car. You know, it's not necessarily the car or something. But I do think that these ancient laws are almost being manipulated to then suit the desire and demands of the ego.
Yeah, I think it's simply the ego. You know, when I grew up, I wanted to be rich. I mean, one woman, she was only about 25. She said, I want to be a billionaire by the time I'm 30. She had started her own company. I mean, that is just, I can't remember how I dealt with that. But that is just a preposterous thing. Just because you want to be doesn't mean it's going to be. You know, there is more involved than that. Not necessarily physical work, but, you know, you've got to develop it in yourself. So if you want to be a successful entrepreneur, they're not very patient, by the way, entrepreneurs, you know. But if you do, you've got to act it. You've got to be it. You've got to look for it and start things off. Then it can happen, but not just sitting in your chair at home and hoping for the best. But some things you can. Let's say you're sick and you imagine yourself healthy. You know, this every day in every way, I'm getting better and better. It does work, but you really have to feel it and be it. There's too much wishful thinking around, you know, especially amongst relationships, you know, where the woman wants a rich man and the man wants a beautiful girl, you know, and then kapow, and it's all over the next time.
Well, we have such a mating crisis. You know, we have more single people than ever before. And I think that you've just nailed why.
I know, and the women are getting older and older and still single. You know, so many of them. In their 50s, I see them. They've never had a really good relationship. Missed out on having children and so on. Personally, and I'm not saying that is the reason, but I think when all this education came in and women said, no, I want to have a good profession. And then my boyfriend and I, we want to travel the world. And maybe when I'm 35 or 40, maybe we think about a family. You know, so the women's roles have changed, and they for a while, they were actually told not to try and be a man. You don't have to be a man. There is one reason why there is a crisis, because I think women are at the most attractive and fertile up to 25, when all the hormones are in the right place, and then they can study later. Mm. You know, all my children studied. And they had their children, my two daughters, they have one son each, when they were just in their 30s. Well, by the time I was 29, I had three kids under 10. So, I did it early on because I had no idea what to do with my life. So I did what women always did. I got married and had kids. Mm. And I've never regretted that. Had them early on.
And you've had the most incredible career since having children, having, you know, discovered astrology and then very much bringing rebirthing. Steep Rise, best-selling books, and you're still working and you've just celebrated your 80th birthday.
Yes.
Which is amazing, Daika.
Yes, well, I have to keep thinking that's, I feel fantastic. Internally, you don't feel 80. You know, internally, one feels same sort of thoughts as when you were young. Life is great and the sun is shining and all these things. You know, I feel very sorry for people who just can't get out of the doldrums. It's almost like they are attached to their negativity. It's a form of comfort. You know, I can't change myself. You know, most people think they can't change themselves. You know, I don't know what happens to people who are in war zones. You know, except that, you know, I was born in a war zone during evacuation, so my mother knew about it, but people just got on with it. But I can't speak for other people in that area, and we can't really. But there are a lot of people walking around in abject misery when they don't have to be. You know, they feel they have nothing to give to anyone, least of all themselves. So that's sad. But, you know, I can do a little bit myself with people.
As you know, I'm a huge advocate for natural ways to optimize health. Nature is full of medicine if we care to find it. So this led me recently to discover Karma Ayurveda, a skincare and hair care brand that now holds a special place in my heart. Originating from India, it's been around for 20 incredible years, crafting holistic, natural products rooted in Ayurvedic wisdom. One of my personal favorites is their Kum Kamadi range, enriched with saffron. Not only does it smell divine, but it also works wonders on the skin, giving you that real, I think I've just slept for 10 hours glow, which let's be honest, we all want. In exciting news, Karma Ayurveda has just arrived in the UK, opening a stunning store in Notting Hill. Here you can explore their range of Ayurvedic treatments and even meet with an Ayurvedic doctor for personalized advice. I recently went this morning to meet a doctor and it was incredible. She checked my pulse and after a few minutes, she was able to tell me everything that I have been struggling with, even though I didn't mention a thing to her. She was able to tell through checking my pulse how my digestion was, and she gave me some incredible advice to help soothe that. And she was also able to tell that my skin was dry. Honestly, it was an incredible experience that I highly recommend if you're in the London area. But if you're not, then you can still tap into the secrets of Ayurveda and tap into that harmony that you can find using Karma Ayurveda's products. Do visit their website at karmaayurveda.com to discover more.
A few questions. Firstly, how do you start flirting with the universe? Because I think if so many
of us... don't flirt, the universe flirts with you. It's suddenly, you know, I give that thing of the crab. I said, oh my God, there's a crab. And it caught my eye and I followed it. It led me to a wallet full of dollar notes, you know. It's when you see something or feel something, it's the universe is giving you a little punch. What about this? Whether it's love at first sight, that's definitely one of them. Or whether it's, you know, as when I was a little girl, I went, kept going to that corner shop where they had a little hat, a little cap, almost like a pixie cap, sort of a green one with a bit of fur around. Every day I looked at it and I looked at it and I looked at it. And I told my mother, I'd seen this little hat. I was about 5, 6 years old because it's on my first school picture. And sure enough, I got it for my birthday. And it was something so simple, but I wanted this hat. And I got it. It was like a pixie hat. So even then, you know, the wish came true that I wanted this hat. It was in the realm of possibility, but I had no idea that I'd actually get it. But I just stood there and stared at it until it became mine.
And do you encourage people to start doing that on really small things at any age? But start to just focus on these small things you desperately want? And then see what happens.
Well, we talk about baby steps. You know, I start with asking people, what makes your life a problem? And then you have a kind of shoe in. There are people who are dyspraxic. Their house is an absolute tip and they really can't, you know. And even when I say start with one drawer, some people have a real turnaround and they suddenly can really do it. And then your life goes, because if your house is a mess, you're stuck. How can you move forward? If every time you know, you've got all this garbage around. I mean, people don't ask me to help them with tidying up their home, I mean, or give them clues on it. But often the emotional life is a mess. You know, they fear the worst and every little bit that happens in their relationship is a big catastrophe. They're not patient and just letting things go. You know, the I Ching says that, there's another bit I talked about in the book, that we must let a lot of things pass without commenting. You know, we don't have to comment on everything somebody does. We can just say, well, it's them, that's me, you know, or that's you, and just let it go. People change anyway as life goes on. I think people are often very intolerant of one another. You know, they want another person to be more like them. They're prejudiced. They want them to be like them. You know, not like them. So in other words, you know, I love you, but can you be more like me? You know, it's complicated. And I don't think we'll ever finish developing. But what is happening with the Aquarian age is this other world, you know, that world that is on another level or frequency. I was just remember reading in this book, The Akashic Records. He collected these otherworldly experiences from about 24 people, exceptional people. This one was a teacher. He was on his way to class, or he'd gone out for a minute, and he enters this door, and he finds himself in a hall of learning, and there's all this knowledge going on. And it seems like he was there all afternoon. And when he comes out again, it's been 10 minutes had gone by. And he went back to his class and brought that new knowledge with him. He was, for that time, on another dimension. And the book is full of these records of people who tune into this other dimension, which exists as a parallel universe. You know, it's there. I think that's what must have happened when we avoided this car crash, because suddenly we
went there. Would you mind sharing that experience?
Yes, this was in France, and we were on a Holy Grail trip, and we were searching for a book. And it was a Sunday morning, and we left around 10 o'clock, and everything was quiet. There was nothing around. And we drive through this village, and of course, they still have the ancient law, whoever comes from the right has priority. We drive straight through the village, and suddenly this tractor comes out, this big vehicle, and it comes right across us. Because, you know, we were supposed to stop. And I thought this was it. And I just shut my eyes. And that's it. Could see myself impact. That was really the distance and everything. Next thing, when I opened them again, we are up at the hill, to the village that was here. We were up at the top of the hill. And Ian goes, he's swearing. I said, no, thank God. We had to stop for a while because it was such an unusual experience. I couldn't have driven all the way up there with my eyes shut because, you know, it was too far away from the village, which was below. There was the most unusual incident in terms of accidents that we've ever had.
Wow.
Absolutely bizarre. I mean, other people tell me about similar things, you know, where there's like a hand of God comes in and puts them from here to there.
Well, I recently had it last week. I was cycling and a car came out. It was my right of way. So I was cycling along and a car came straight out. And it was, I don't even know how, I wasn't flattened. And for whatever reason, the car managed, it literally, I could feel it just on my hair as it went past. And it reminded me of this experience that you shared. And I thought, this is extraordinary how
You're
I'm
meant
not
to be here.
Still meant to be here.
Yes, yes.
But I'm sure there's so many people listening to this will have thought of those kind of near-death experiences that didn't happen.
Yes, there are quite a few experiences like that that come with when accidents don't happen. Or the child gets saved and everybody else is dead. That's happened as well. Child is unharmed, like somebody. Or 9/11, you know, where people said these big arms came and carried them to safety, but they couldn't see any person. You know, these weird things, they have to do with another dimension.
I also would love for you to share the amazing story of when you and your husband were walking across Battersea Bridge and you meet an angel.
Yes. We had been out to dinner, so we walked across. We were staying just the other side. We were living in Glasgow. We were staying the other side of the bridge in Cheyne Walk. We walked across the bridge and we saw this chap coming towards us. Actually, he was wearing a tuxedo. He looked like he was in evening dress with a frilly white shirt. I didn't quite put that in the book. White cuffs and so on, and blonde hair down to here. It's like golden hair. And he comes to her, and I thought, what a handsome guy. And he stops. Are you guys okay? He said, in a sort of weird voice. I said he had a gray face, but I can't remember now that he had a gray face, but maybe he did. And we said, yeah, perfectly all right. Perfectly all right. And so he walked on, and I turned around and said, yeah, that was an angel. That feeling was just so otherworldly. And of course, at 5 o'clock in the morning, Ian was taken to hospital with blue light, with emergency ambulance, onto oxygen, intravenous drips, and he had nearly suffocated. I mean, he had a bit of a chest condition anyway, but he nearly suffocated. That evening, we were on our way back to Glasgow, but it saved his life. You know, he came into my, we were staying in two different rooms. He said, Dyke, you've got to call an ambulance. I can't breathe anymore. And so we did. And so this angel, it might have been a warning. And I really regret that I hadn't stopped and say, what do you mean? You know, it didn't occur to me. I thought he was just some guy. But there was this extra feeling about him, something very special and sort of supernatural.
Have you ever met any angels since him?
Not someone directly with wings, but wise beings. Yeah, one particular wise being, when I was living down in Kent, my children were still small, and it's that sort of poltergeist time when there are things happening. And for a long time, I think it's in the book, when I was, it was really difficult with that marriage, my second marriage. And there was this lady in blue-gray. I would wake up and open my eyes, and there she was standing there, very calmly, but it was a benign presence. And one night, I come out of the bathroom, and I could see this gray figure disappearing into the bedroom down the stairs. And I thought it was my eldest daughter in my gray silk dressing gown. I said, "What are you doing up?" But she wasn't even sleeping in there. She was in another room. So there was some kind of presence that quickly disappeared and didn't want to be seen. That's the only thing I can think about.
You know, with synchronicities and angels, is it a communication that we can develop with our angels? And are angels people that have lived and passed, or are angels just a totally separate being?
You know, I think there is a divided opinion about that. You know, I don't know, but let's say the angel Michael, one of my clients, she was an award-winning osteopath or chiropractor. She's dead now. But one day she encountered the Archangel Michael. She absolutely certain, you were sitting there, long hair and so on. And after that, all she wanted to do was die so she could be with him again. And she did die in the end. So as she said all the time, you know, she had long hair down to here, though she was kind of middle-aged. She said, "I can feel my wings, you know, I'm his other half." She was quite capable of working with people. You know, she wasn't crazy or anything like that. But for her, the Archangel was real. She could see him, she could talk to him. It's never happened to me like that. I mean, there are people who are experts on this, who work, you know, they do angel workshops and so on. I've attended one myself once, but I didn't quite like that because she said, "Oh, you've got to command them to come here, otherwise they won't come." You know, I thought, well, that doesn't sound right with angels. You know, it's such a privilege if they do come. They probably decide whether they come or not. So angels is not my speciality. They obviously must exist because of the painters of old, you know, with the halos to show that they were enlightened beings. And that, of course, happens if you're in any kind of transpersonal development. The light in the head does develop. And then, you know, your brain gets heated and dormant brain cells wake up. Goethe talks about the creative process if we concentrated on it. And he actually says, and he talked in rhyme a lot, the brain becomes heated and the task is soon completed. You know, the artists sometimes, or writers, the poets or painters talk about the heat that comes up just before they start to create. So, you know, there is something going on. You know, the saints obviously were enlightened beings and they came down here to. I was wondering this morning what Taylor Swift is about, because what a phenomenon that woman is. Is she sent to for something specific? Certainly not for the football team. But there must be something about someone like that who is so universally liked and so amazing, like everything he touches, you know, is sort of turns into something good. I don't know enough about her. All I know is that she seems to be very successful. Every now and then, there are unusual people that are supernatural, almost, I would say. You know, they are beyond what most people could aspire to. Extraordinary talents, you know, or I even think people who can just read a page like that in a book, I think they're very lucky. I can't do that. I take hours, you know, to read a book. Yeah, it's a mystery. And I hope it will always remain a mystery because, you know, if the mystery goes, we will ruin it.
Yes.
We want to own it.
You say that sometimes it's easier to see synchronicity when you're traveling. Why is that?
Because you need it. Because, you know, you need to catch a train or you need to find a hotel when there's nothing else around. I've got a lovely little story there. We wanted to get into this chapel. There was a black, my husband wrote a book about black virgins. And we wanted to see that virgin. And when we got there, there was a big fence around the whole compound and everything was locked. So I said, "Oh, well, let's then drive on. We're never going to, you know." He said, "No, let's go and go into that little bar there where the River Rhine and the Rhone meet." And you could actually see them before there were big rivers. And there was a little bar right between the two. So we go inside and Ian orders two tiny little, you know, glasses of red wine, which they do in little shots. And he said, "Do you know where we could find the curator to the chapel?" And he goes under the table, pulls out the big key and said, "Here, go in. And when you finish, can you bring the key back?" And so we had that whole chapel full of mosaics and it's wonderful to ourselves to take photographs. And the night before, I had a dream that Ian and I were down on the coast. There was a shipwreck and we were helping people to save them and making them big urns of tea. And then there was an enormous thunderstorm. So after we'd been in the chapel, the mosaics were of the sailors being shipwrecked. And the Black Virgin was there because she saves them from shipwreck. And so that was one synchronicity. And then it was the last visit on our day back to Calais. And as we were driving to Calais, there was a thunderstorm. And so I had the dream, then the mosaic, and then the thunderstorm happened as well. So again, these are meaningful coincidences. When you're traveling, bizarre things happen. Or you meet someone and they, you know, they grew up the same place where you're from. Mm. It's happened to me in London. I was here for 2 weeks. The first thing happened, the two people that inspired me to come to England, I just came out of Water Street into Oxford Street, right on the corner. We almost bumped into each other. They were there. And another one I had 2 weeks before worked in a bookshop with her. And I get out of the tube at Tottenham Court Road. She's just coming in. It's so bizarre. These meetings of three different people that 2 weeks ago I was with them in Hamburg and they're there in London as well. I had no idea they were coming to London.
I have to say, since I was rereading your book, so many of those situations have arisen in my own life. And this is why I'm very excited for people to read this, because it is, as soon as you just tune your brain
exactly
into it, it's wild what starts to happen.
They multiply those synchronicities.
Yes.
It's to do with awareness, isn't it? Because those things probably would have happened anyway, but this time you actually see them or you feel something.
And you do write that often synchronicities happen in a sequence.
Yes, as I just told you these. But also, you know, I could say to you, the only reason I'm sitting here now is because before I came to England, I had my tonsils taken out. And I could go a bit further back why I had them taken out. But because I had them taken out, I arrived 2 weeks late in England. And somebody said, out of synchronistically, let me show you London. And so we went through Soho and I heard this jazz music coming out of Old Ronnie Scott's when it was still in the basement. And I went in, I introduced myself, and I met some musicians, and through that I met my first husband. And now, if I had come 2 weeks earlier, I would not have had this tour. That really started a whole sequence of synchronicities for me. But there were so many in my life, so many. I think I was the right person to write that book because I could remember so many things.
I think it's something that's quite important to discuss is being able to interpret synchronicity. Because as you say, some synchronicities are a nod of encouragement, whereas others are a sign of warning. Mm. How do you know which is which?
Yes, I mean, I talk about when we were going to, we were looking for property in Mallorca, and again something went wrong. You know, people didn't turn up, people gave us the wrong phone number. Or we locked the car keys in the boot, couldn't get into the car. You know, I don't know. I can't remember how we got in there in the end, how we managed. But the final straw came when we locked ourselves out of the rental apartment with a key on the inside of the lock. So a locksmith wouldn't have been able to get in. So the owner of it had to wake someone up or somehow find one of the neighbors. And he did a thing on the outside of the building to try and get into the apartment that way. But then we understood. And instead of moving to Mallorca, we packed up here in London and moved to Glasgow for 8 years.
And you just had all of these signs showing you the way that this wasn't supposed to be the place.
Absolutely. And the whole, because my husband was a Jungian analyst and he was going to be part of the group in Spain, based in Barcelona. He thought he could commute sort of there. And they were drummed out of the brownies. They had their license taken away for a couple of years, I think, because of whatever. And he said, all right, that's it. We don't have to go there anymore.
This reminds me of something that you wrote, and it's one of my favorite lines from the book. And you write, I have found again and again that when we are on the right path, when what we are doing is what we are meant to be doing, doors open, opportunities present themselves, and progress becomes relatively easily.
Yes, it really does, you know. When the right thing happens and we are in that right moment. There are so many things. And you think, oh, you're just a lucky person, but it's not. It's about awareness.
Being in alignment. And you also write, when you ask for help from the cosmos, it will only be a matter of time before a sign appears. Now, how do you advise people to ask for help?
Oh, right. My invention, my latest invention is the cosmic Amazon. Do you know, when you order something from Amazon and they say, thank you for your order, delivery tomorrow, you know, before 10 o'clock or something, you have faith that it will arrive, don't you? I mean, I certainly
yes.
do. I don't
yes.
think, oh, they're kidding me. So you have faith. Now, it's exactly the same when you, this is all what these teachers of the New Thought tell us. When you have a wish, let's say you say, I want to get this job, let's say. And so you order, signing the document, you order the phone call that says, yes, you're in, you know, you order that from the cosmic Amazon. You order and you wait. And that's it. Cosmic Amazon. It's your faith that brings it in, the things that are not yet seen. If you just order and then forget about it and don't have any faith and say, oh, well, let's try this. I don't think that works. I think the connection is that faith that it's coming your way. It's a two-way thing, isn't it? You put it up there. Cosmic Amazon's got it. They know. They know what they have to do. All I have to do is wait, but you prepare the ground here for receiving it. And if you go over your life, you might find a lot of things have happened that way.
Another quote I want to share from your book, you write, treating everything as if it were the most important thing brings purpose to even the smallest details of life. If at the same time you can also imagine that some form of higher intelligence is guiding you, the power and inspiration you're capable of invoking will increase immeasurably and enrich your life beyond your dreams. And so you give the example of even putting as much purpose as you possibly can to just washing the dishes.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and if you do it, you might as well give attention to it and do it properly. You know, and there was one chap, he was an artist, but when he got a job as a washer-upper, he said, this is Zen, really. You know, he said, I was going to be the best washer-upper that this restaurant's ever had. And it's so rewarding to do that. You know, whether you put your clothes away every morning or you clear up before you go to bed, or they're all rituals. That really, this is probably more psychological. It's to do with your will. If the will is saying, well, you know, if you want to order at life or you want to get what you want, you've got to use your will as well. So if you, for instance, you know, some people, if you want to save time, get tomorrow's wardrobe ready tonight. When my children were little, I would set the breakfast table before I went to bed. And everything was always cleared away to make everything run more smoothly. There is more space for things to happen then. Gurdjieff said himself, you know, that great teacher, that if whatever you do, make it your God. You know, when I learned astrology, it was 24. I'm sure I was dreaming it as well. And then after that, it became the tarot. And then it was training in psychosynthesis as a therapist. Then it was training as a rebirther. Then it became as a past life therapist and all these things. But they were really absorbing. It's much easier then if you make it your God and you say, well, I'm going to pay attention. Or even going for a walk, I pay attention of my feet hitting the ground. It's much easier. And there is, you know, every time you pay attention, your mind grows. And your energy is focused. You gather your energy. I'm not very good at paying attention. You know, I sometimes read half a page in a book and I have to go back because I've been thinking about something else. So that's a particular subject for me. You know, it's not always like that, but it can be like that when it goes off a tangent. You do a better job when you pay attention, don't you?
100%.
Yeah.
I think this also speaks to another point that is quite critical, I think, for synchronicity, and something you mentioned throughout the book is allowing there to be silence to hear the other world.
Definitely. Oh, yeah. There was, in one case, I was in meditation. I used to meditate regularly. 6 o'clock in the morning, I would be in another room. Everybody was still asleep and the cat on my lap because he wouldn't be left outside. And I would meditate for 25 minutes. But it was such a difficult time. That's when I saw this lady in blue as well, that I was trying to send a signal up to the powers that be, to show me a way out, to, you know what people do, you know, just give me an answer, whatever. I'm sitting there, all of a sudden, this voice came, we are showing you the best way out or yeah, we'll show you the best way through, or something like that. But it was this German accent, it was an older person. And I just had to laugh. You know, I thought, okay, yeah, patience, patience, you know. It was amazing. I've heard other voices, but this was really the only time it came through and really asking for something like that. It was a very strange time, you know, when I was regularly meditating in that way. Mm. And I think, and I need to get back to it again, because it does make a difference. You do get clearer in your head.
What sort of meditation was it?
Well, I'm a graduate actually of the Arcane School, which is a transpersonal school with meditation and studying, and you've got to write papers and so on. And then you come under that protection as well, because if you open yourself up to the cosmos, you could ask all kinds of things in. And it's called occult meditation. It's not sort of doing a mantra. It's a really nice meditation. You know, you align your bodies, you have a visualization, you have a mantra, and you have a seed thought to concentrate, to really focus on. So it's 25 minutes of 5 minutes of various bits. It suited me fine. You'd sit there and you're, blah, 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 you know, mantra, mana, you know, just one phrase wouldn't suit me. I would just fall asleep. And I did it for 30 years. So wow. It was very strong. And I should still be doing it now. But other things are also taking over. I could just go back to it. I don't have to be in the school anymore. I can just do it by myself. But you do come under some higher rulership, and you are aware. Sometimes you even see, you know, you suddenly get an image like a television screen of these superior beings that you're working with. And it's not illusion. It's the thing that happens in a meditation. And, you know, we go as far as we can, and then we stop, and then people pick it up again at a later stage. Mm. That's the usual, I think, with people. Or they chant for several years and then they give it up and do something else. You know, that's possible as well.
How is synchronicity and death linked?
Well, I think mainly in the timing of it. Through astrology, I knew that at the age of 45, Saturn and Venus on my chart come together, which is separation, which could be a death, could be bereavement. It was a difficult time. And exactly to the day when the aspect was exact, my father died. And Ian said, oh, it was a love affair. I said, yeah, I really adored him. You know, I wasn't the daddy's little girl, but I just adored him. He was just a great human being. So that was quite a big event for me. So you could say the synchronicity is somebody here ready to go. And then on the other hand, the planets aligning. I mean, I don't know what happened to my sisters, whether they had similar aspects. But for me, this was the significance. And then I think shortly after, my dog died as well. So I had these two things coming together. And the dog dying, you know, if you love your dog, it's like a child dying. That's a very important thing. Otherwise, I don't know. People might be dreaming of their death or something, but the synchronicity is the timing, the astrological timing, that there is a time, you know, to... Oh, yeah, clocks, right? You know, I was with Charles Harvey, the president of the Astrological Association, and somebody had bequeathed all their books to the association. So we drove along. And this guy's wife had died before him, and he painted everything inside in black. The place was coming into this house, everything black. So Charles was on the phone in the other room, and I was waiting for him to finish. And there were about four clocks in the room, and they had all stopped at the same time. It's like 20 past five or whatever it was. And I noticed that. I sort of look around. And then afterwards, I said to Charles, do you actually have the time of his death? Which the other guy was an astrologer as well, so they would have noted and all the time. He said, yes, and it was exactly the time on the clocks. But that's a phenomenon well known, actually, that when somebody dies, some people can see the flash of lightning, and often the clocks do stop. And I heard about it first when I was still in school, about 10 years old. Somebody's grandmother had died, and she said the mother saw a flash of bright light as the grandmother died and her clock stopped.
Wow.
So that could be the energy of that. Or people going, I once met a guy at a conference and he was doing research into people going into prison and how their watches broke.
Gosh.
Yeah. Also, when I was in hospital after giving birth to my first child, we were in hospital for a week then, and I took my little watch off, the first watch I bought myself, and put it on the tray because you were breastfeeding 4 minutes here, 4 minutes there, whatever. And it kept dropping to the floor. And by the time I got home, the watch had broken from dropping to the floor. I don't know whether I pushed it or whatever. I took it in. It couldn't be repaired. They say it's not worth repairing. And it was actually the end of my marriage. Having that baby was the end of my marriage because I was married to an only child husband, a Capricorn, and he was so jealous of the baby, it became a nightmare. He didn't like me to put the baby first. And so, you know, we were together for another 5 years, but then it was over. And
wow.
Again, nowadays, if this watch breaks, it's probably because I leave London or something like that, you know. But I've had this for, Ian bought that. I've had it now for 40 years, I've had that.
Yeah, you were talking about it before the interview. You know, always, if you notice a clock has stopped, keep it, fix it immediately.
Yes. This one's been fixed because I lost the glass twice, but the mechanism, you know, is very good. It was really a man's watch and I liked it. And I never saw a reason to have something else. But that is definitely something in everyone's life that people should pay attention to. My mother left me her gold watch when she died, this bits and pieces that I got. And so I put it on. I thought, let's wear it, you know, nice gold thing. As soon as I put it on, it broke. Yeah, so I gave it to my middle daughter and I said, look, if you're interested, just get it fixed. It's probably just the mechanism, you know, it was one of... Anyway, it wasn't to be, you see.
My last question is, because a lot of people will say that, you know, they have been, they communicate with the other side. Let's say someone's passed. For example, my mother, she always feels that she's received a message from the other side when she sees a white feather. What's your thoughts on that?
I heard about the white feather things. And the very first time I heard about, you know, when you find a white feather, an angel has just crossed your path. I found a white feather on my doorstep. As if somebody just put it there for me.
Wow.
I like it. I don't pick them up necessarily. If it's a big one, I would. But I think there's something to it.
Wow.
Because too many people have reported on, you know, that it's a sign. Or, you know, after Ian died, because we were talking before long before he died, what animal he would show himself as. He said, oh, I don't know. You know, I have no idea. But I think 2 or 3 days, it wasn't very long after he had died, suddenly a huge fox came into the gardens. The only time, the first time I ever saw a fox in the garden, we were in a quadrant, and I don't know how they got in. Huge, with a great big bushy tail. And it came straight up to the conservatory, and I have a bed of garlic chive there. And it went straight to the garlic chive and went like that, you know, pushing into it. I said, go away. I didn't realize it might be Ian. Because when he was alive, every day he had 2 spring onions with taramasalata at lunchtime. He tucked them in and he just loved it. And garlic chive, you know, very similar to that. And then he walked away and sat there for a while. And once he disappeared, I said, oh my God, that must have been Ian. A year later, on his death day, suddenly a young fox came into the garden. Wow. It was about a year old or so. And it just sat there and looked at us. And again, my son was there, and then it jumped on the shed and was gone. I said, my God, it's his death day. So there is a synchronicity there, the inner and the outer coming together. It was meaningful.
Well, thank you so much for this incredible...
Well, thank you for having me. I thoroughly enjoyed that. Revisiting the book was a wonderful experience for me as well.
I was honestly, truly, I've given your book to more people than I've ever gifted any other book.
Oh, thank you. That's wonderful to hear.
It's really the gift of optimism. Like you said, you know, you were very much blessed as a child with this optimistic outlook that you've taken through, no matter what you've gone through. And I feel like this truly is a great practice to evolve more optimism in someone's life.
Yeah, and we have to remind ourselves of it again and again.
You don't know what miracle may be waiting for you.
Absolutely, you know. Just find out what miracle you need and then order it from Cosmic Amazon.
I love it. Thank you so much for listening. And if you enjoyed today, please hit subscribe and leave a comment because this helps the podcast so much. I'd be endlessly grateful if you wouldn't mind doing so.
My mental health book, Happy Not Perfect, is available to order now. The book teaches you how to be a flexible thinker, a skill that helps you navigate any challenge that might come your way, helps you manage emotions, and helps you thrive to be the bendiest version.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Of yourself. Until next time, I love hearing from you, so do shoot me a message on Instagram, send me a DM with any of your thoughts. Stay safe and well.